You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begay on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We're also heard on the World Wide Web all over this planet. I'm not sure, Ellen, today we are really going to be in China. Yeah. All our shows are downloaded and can be heard on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, the Sita Media Inc. app. And also, in studio today, I am so delighted to have with me Ellen Little, my co-host, who's been here for almost 9 years with me. We also have my friend Vicky Michener, who is an activist and a school teacher, and she also ran for office for the county commission seat in District 2. And then we also have a young man that I am so impressed by, and he motivates so many of us here in Brevard County, Florida. His story, his success, and all he's doing as an activist and attorney. His name is Edmund Alton. Welcome, Edmund Alton, and thank you for coming on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Thank you so much.
Yes. And for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, I was trying really hard to find someone who was able to tell us a little bit about what's going on with COVID-19, not just in the United States, but around the world. And so we're trying to, Ellen, myself, and Paul, as you all know, our show is fun, it's unscripted, it's very, very educational and very informational at times. And so I read in the Florida Today a few months ago about a gentleman who lives in China who was born and raised here in Palm Bay, Florida. His name is Keenan Carver, and him and I became friends on Facebook, and I've been watching this young man and what he's doing in China, and he's been giving us a play-by-play about what happened during the coronavirus and his experience. And so I asked him if he'd like to call in on the show, and of course he said yes. And so Ellen is trying her best to get him on the show, and we're trying to get him on Zoom or WhatsApp or something like that, because apparently his U.S. SIM card has gone missing. So that's okay. If we can get him on for a few minutes, we'd be very excited to talk to him and find out about the lockdown in Wuhan and what happened over there. And so, but in the meantime, you know, all of us are trying to stay safe, and we're trying to do our best with this coronavirus and what's happening. So as a healthcare professional and as a mom and a person in a community that cares about everyone's life and my own, I'm just saying, you know what, you have a right to wear your mask or not wear your mask. But I do stress that it's important to wash your hands, wear your mask, and socially distance if you can, because the life that you save could be somebody's grandmother's, a father, a mother, a child, somebody that is, their immune system is compromised. And you don't know who's got it. So you have to pretend that everyone has it at this point. You know, and I see Vicky shaking your head. Mm-hmm. You agree. You and I pretty much agree on everything. Yeah. I mean, do you know of anyone? I posed that question on Facebook. I said, do you know of anyone who's had the COVID-19? And did you see how many people said yes? Mm-hmm. And how many people said yes, people in their families as well? Well, while Ellen is trying to get Mr. Keenan Carver on Skype or Zoom, I'm going to go right to our guest who's in studio with us, Vicky Michener and Elton Admon. And for our listeners, just remember today that our show has been sponsored by Jessica Travis Law Firm. And we thank Jessica for her support with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. So, Vicky, tell Paul, can we go to Vicky? Yeah, so we're going to go to Vicky. Vicky, tell me a little bit about yourself. Of course, I know, but some of our listeners might not. Recently we had a march and we had over 4,000 people here in Brevard County, Florida. Give us a little play-by-play up to that point. What happened that made you say, you know what, I am going to get this march going because Black Lives Matter?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for having me here today. Sita, it's always a pleasure to come to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and be a guest here on your show. And it's, of course, a blessing to be in the midst of Attorney Alton Edmonds. So I just want to say it's just... I'm so honored to be in here with your press.
Stop.
I don't know if I bow, Percy.
I'll bow for you. Namaste.
So, Sita, to answer your question, in regards to a play-by-play that led up to the March for Justice that we had here in Brevard County the other month, it all spanned from the George Floyd incident. When that happened, and to watch a human being die, you see it. You can see the life of this person leaving them. That actually did something for a lot of people. And so it was actually my younger sister, Veronica, who came to myself and Deputy Mayor Alex Goins and said, "Hey, you guys are looked at as community leaders and we need to do something." And so I asked her, "Well, what did you have in mind?" And so it was a lot of teenagers and 20-something-year-olds out there ready to just get together and go protest and march here in Brevard County. And I said, "Well, you guys have to have some sort of a plan of approach. You know, if you go out there, anything could happen. You can have ill actors that may come out and participate." So we figured out some stuff. We had a Zoom meeting, actually, right? I hosted a Zoom meeting under my nonprofit, Forever Our Home Incorporated. And then we incorporated community leaders throughout Brevard County. We actually had Representative Tyler Saroy. He was on there. And there was a couple other elected officials that were on that particular Zoom meeting. And we formulated a plan. And so that plan came into action. We actually incorporated Attorney Alton Edmonds. He was our logistics coordinator in that whole event. And we got a bunch of donations in from Ben & Jerry's. They were a corporate sponsor. Wasn't looking for that, but it was a blessing. And, the rest is history. And we had some obstacles, Sita, to be honest with you. There was some threats where we had to work with local law enforcement, FDLE, and the FBI to vet the threats that were coming in.
Yeah. Well, sometimes all it takes is one person to start something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then everything flows, right? So what were your thoughts and feelings as you watched the peaceful demonstrations? Because we've had so many people that, talk about the demonstrations, and most of them were peaceful. But then you had some people who were just breaking things, being destructive, and nobody likes that. Nobody wants people to go out there and break things and destroy other people's property.
Correct.
But as you watched the peaceful protest here in Brevard and how many people come together, how did that make you feel?
So I just want to throw out there, because when people see the narratives on TV, those are isolated small incidents, and you have paid agitators that go into these areas and they'll spray Black Lives Matter on something and they're breaking stuff. Those are paid agitators.
Yeah.
People who want to see change in their communities, they're not out there tearing up stuff. Those are not the people that are out there. So one of the things that touched me the most, Sita, when we had the March for Justice, is the coordination that Rockledge Police actually did with the SCAT. Brevard County SCAT, where they had SCAT buses that went to a particular location, and they picked people up from out of Cocoa and transported them to the starting point in Rockledge. And it was a surreal moment because I wanted to ride the bus. I wasn't trying to hurry up and rush and be to the front of the line. I just wanted to intake that moment. So I actually rode one of the SCAT buses down to the starting point, and I was just amazed to see how many people from all backgrounds,
All walks of life. Right, and they, riding the bus. They came together.
But it touched me when I seen it was just a melting pot on the bus, but it was so many young people that was talking, and I was listening to them. And one of them was in tears and said that she felt like she was a freedom rider, as if we were in Montgomery getting ready to walk across the Beatrice Bridge in Selma. So I took that in and I said, oh my God.
History in the making.
It was history in the making.
Right. And you're a mom. You're a veteran. You have two boys and three girls. You were also, you're a retired U.S. Army First Sergeant.
No, my fiancé.
Your
fiancé. Retired.
Right. And you're a disabled combat veteran.
Yes.
Right. And, but you have also had to have that talk with mm-hmm. your children.
Yes.
I mean, I am brown. I had to have that talk with my son when he was little as well, you know, the talk with. Of course, you know, if you teach your children to be respectful, obey the law and all that, you're okay. But you still have to go that extra mile and say, you know what? I personally have found that people of color, we've had to work harder to prove ourselves.
Yes.
And then you throw in, if something happened with law enforcement, it's almost like you better stand up straight and do what I tell you. So you've had that talk with your kids.
Yes, I've had that talk with, and I actually have two boys. You know, it is really hard when you are raising black and brown boys these days, because there are things that most people probably take for granted, like getting up early in the morning to take a run in the morning or in the afternoon, or, you know, just doing normal things that you think that people should be able to do. But my oldest son is almost 20 years old, and I had to have that talk with him because he exercises, and I live in Vieira, predominantly white area. And I told my son, if you're going to go run, you either run when the sun is coming out, or if you're going running in the afternoons, you know, you need to run before dark, you know, and carry some sort of ID on you. It's just.
Oh, I've heard of people having to run with like the logo of a shirt of the college they attended. So people know that you are a person of substance, that you have a good job, that you went to college. I mean,
wow.
I've heard of that. I heard it on NPR.
Wow. That's, you know, but, you know, unfortunately, they have to have those talks with your children in the black community. It's an unfortunate situation, but it's a necessary conversation to have so that our young men and boys know how to protect themselves.
Right. And as a mom, I mean, have any of the children ever faced any discrimination or had any trouble with law enforcement?
My oldest son actually had an incident with another young lady of a different ethnicity. I can't really elaborate on it because it's still ongoing in the courts. But basically, law enforcement took her side in this story. With no evidence or anything, and basically painted my son out to be this monster.
So he was judged.
He was already judged. Just to kind of stay in that borderline, attorney Alton Edmond actually represented my son in a civil portion of the proceedings. And during that exchange, the other opposing counsel painted my son out to be this big, in his words, he was like, you know, Your Honor, look at him. He's big, you know, he's way bigger than her and all this other stuff. And he was just short of saying, and he's black.
Yeah.
But you knew what he was painting.
Yeah.
And so it was an unfortunate situation. But as a mother, you know, I was hurt that I couldn't protect my child from this, but this is the reality, unfortunately, that black Americans face.
Yeah, well, and you know, it's hard because, you know, we all watch television, we see beauty, mm-hmm. we see how people, you know, carry on about light skin, dark skin, medium skin.
Right.
I mean, I'm Indian, but I do know that in our culture, the light-skinned Indian girls were told you won't have any trouble getting a husband. But the dark girls like myself were told you might have a hard time getting a husband because the color of your skin. And it still happens up to today in a lot of cultures.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so taking that into consideration, I mean, we as human beings who have lived on this planet for so long, it is our role to empower our young children to make them feel like they belong and lift them up and give them that self-confidence that it doesn't matter what color you are, what religion you are, what race you are, where you come from, that you are being lifted up,
right,
and you belong. And I think your march here in Cocoa sent a message that people belong, that we're one race, one human race. And yeah,
race.
Black lives do matter. And people have to say it, and they have to say it proud and understand that it's the truth.
Right.
Because we were seeing what was happening, you know, with George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery and all these people, right?
Right. And I think, you know, people just have to understand, because I see a lot of stuff on social media, and they're like, black lives, it shouldn't be black lives matter, all lives matter. We know all lives matter. But right now, the black lives are the ones that are being targeted by, you know, unfortunate situations, whether it be with law enforcement or citizens who think they're vigilantes, like with the Ahmaud Arbery case.
The discrimination.
You know, he was running, and, you know, they just felt that he, quote unquote, didn't belong in that neighborhood. You know, so
what about the UPS guy, the FedEx guy, went to deliver a package,
and they blocked him in.
They blocked him in,
and he had to wait until the homeowner told the neighborhood people, you know, that he's there delivering appliances to our house.
I mean, the judgment of because of skin color sometimes really gets me. I know once when I lived in Tortoise Island, a guy came to deliver a packet, and I was sweeping my yard, you know, with no makeup on, just some ugly old dress. And he just looked at me like I was some maid or something. He goes, is the lady of the house in? I said, oh, no, she's not. And he says, I have a package for her. And I said, oh, I'll sign for you. He goes, well, are you sure you could do? Of course I am. And then I said, I live here. I'm the owner. And he goes, all right. I mean, it was like, why are you judging me? Because I have a broom in my hand sweeping outside, you know.
Wow.
It happened. It happens. It happens a lot, you know, to people. But anyways, now we also have with us a young man. And of course, you know, I was going to ask you about COVID-19, if you were scared during the protests here in the peaceful protest in Brevard, if you were worried about that. But I noticed a lot of people wore their masks.
Well, we actually coordinated and had, 600 masks on hand. We had a little bit over 600 masks on hand that was donated from different companies. We paid for hand washing stations that were along the marching route with sanitizers at medical stations. We actually had medical professionals, doctors, nurse practitioners, nurses, firefighters. They volunteered to be out at various checkpoints as medical stations, where we had, you know, other hand sanitizers and medical equipment on hand. So, yes, COVID was an issue. However, you had people that were fearing for their lives. You know, we may not even make it to have COVID because we have the wrong interaction with law enforcement, or if we're in an area that someone thinks that we don't belong in our neighborhoods, regardless of if we're, you know, paying for it or not or whatever. You know, someone can take it upon themselves to enforce the law on their own. So
take you out.
So
you don't have to wait for COVID-19 to take you out.
So that was a lot of people's fears. So, I mean, you know,
very stressful.
It was.
Well, you know, the reason why I ask you that, because we do have someone that actually lived through COVID in the early stages in China, and I think he's here with Ellen, and we're going to try to get him out for 10 minutes or so before we take our break to chat with us about what happened in China in the beginning of COVID-19. And I can't hear him right now, Paul, but should I? I'm ready. So, Mr. Keenan Carver, are you on now? Can you hear me?
I am here. I can hear you.
Oh, this is Sita Biggie. I'm the host of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And we have in studio with us our good friend, Alton Edmund. Is it Edmund Alton? Alton Edmund. I remember I used to call you Edmund Alton before. And we have Vicky Michener, and they're both upstanding community members here in Brevard. And Ellen Little, of course, my co-host, and Paul, who is the pastor of a church. And he runs a board for us. And we were all like delighted that you could call in. Ellen, I told you she will rig you up somehow. So tell us a little bit about yourself and what made you leave Brevard County, Florida, to make it all the way to China.
Yes, thank you for having me. Yes, I was born and raised in the Space Coast. I went to Satellite High School. I also went to Bayside High School. After that, I went to Atlanta to Morehouse College. Came back home, and after a couple of years, I really wanted to do something big with my life, so I decided to come to China to teach, and it was one of the best decisions of my life. I love it here.
Wow. So tell us, what did you when you decided to go to China? Did you have the blessings of your parents, or how did you just come home one day and say, "This is my decision"?
Oh, absolutely. I had the full blessing of my family. They thought it was a wonderful opportunity for me to go out and see the world. You know, since the epidemic happened, they are crying for me to come home. But of course, in the beginning, they were very proud of me to go out and explore.
Yeah. So tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, give us tell us your firsthand experience about what happened when you heard about COVID-19. And you're now, granted, you're away from family, you're in a country away from all of us here, the USA, and you have to deal with this pandemic.
Yes, it was very difficult in the beginning. So it almost mirrored what happened in the U.S. because I know in the U.S., spring break, everything started happening during spring break. Well, in China, at the end of January, they have the Chinese New Year, which is a one-week break. So during that one-week break, I decided to take a vacation out to another city. And during that vacation, the epidemic broke out and businesses started to close down, and you could just see everywhere became a ghost town right before our eyes. I didn't even know what the full, measure of what was going on at first until I was just told to stay at home by my boss, pretty much.
Were people listening, though? Were they wearing their mask and just listening to the authorities? Or did you have people that, like here, that decides that I have a choice?
No, everybody in the beginning, it was pretty much shut down completely. Nobody was told to even leave their home. We all stayed in home, you know, made do. And of course, when we had to go out, we were mandated to wear our mask. It was, you know, it's a different government system here. You know, wonderful America has that democracy, but in China, they have communism where we were mandated to, you know, wear our mask. If we went to the supermarket, we could not go into the supermarket if we did not have a mask on. No choice about that.
I guess if you want to eat, you put on your mask.
If you want to eat, you put on your mask and you do what you're told at that point. So in that regard, you know, it benefited them, you know, very well. Everybody, they had a very hive mind when it came to that. So it benefited, you know, everybody well in that regard.
So while you're there in China, have you experienced any sort of culture shock or any kind of racism or anything like that while you're there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's kind of scary to see that racism is everywhere you go.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of left, you know, America during this, you know, this Trump shakeover to see, you know, what else I can experience outside of, you know, prejudice and that sort. But I have experienced it here, so I can't say that I've totally gotten away from that.
Yeah. And are there other Americans there that you all could depend on as for support system when during this virus or even like during the year? What does a young man from Palm Bay, Florida do when you're not teaching or you're not on your job?
Absolutely. There are a group of foreigners that I can rely on. I've also met some very wonderful English-speaking local friends who have been very, very helpful for me. But absolutely, I have to rely on my employers a lot. You know, I have to rely on them. During the epidemic, my employers were the ones who had to bring masks to my apartment. When I said I ran out of masks and I was fearful for that. So I have to rely a lot on my employers, but I do have foreigner friends here, a small group who are very helpful and who I could hang out with during my off time.
Yeah. Well, you know, and we all watched in horror, as, you know, on the television and internet, yes. People were talking about the bats, and that's the diseases spread in a lab and with the bats and back and forth.
Yes.
What were they telling you all there that caused the coronavirus, the people who actually live in China?
They were telling us it was caused by the wet market. You know, a wet market is somewhere where they have, it's kind of unsanitary. They have just, you know, chopped meat out, you know, in a basket, and they allow people to shop. So it just happened in one of those wet markets where, you know, not a lot of sanitation goes on.
Yeah.
It happened from meat.
So somebody sent me a question on my Facebook, and they asked to ask you about the work ethics in China, because we mm-hmm. hear so much in the politicians talk so much about China, and they talk about the tariffs and the trade and what's going on. But
Right. Tell
us about the work ethics there, because I don't think Americans understand how many hours the Chinese people work and for how little pay.
Yes. It's a whole different kind of system here. They do work very hard. You know, they even have their own kind of saying for it that translates to 996, which is 9 hours a day, you know, 6 days a week. You only get one day off and 9 hours a day. So there is that. They do work, you know, very, very hard. I will say that. Education is different. Everybody is required almost to get a master's degree. So the education level goes higher. It's just different, I would say.
Pays for their healthcare and their education so that they could attain these degrees?
Both are much, much cheaper. Both are much, much cheaper. I would say the quality of living here is, you know, tremendously cheaper than the U.S. Tremendously, tremendously cheaper than the U.S. So healthcare is very, very cheap, you know, as well as, you know, any other things. Cost of living is just tremendously cheaper.
Yeah, because someone was talking about China the other day on Facebook, and I said, well, look around in your home and see how many things you have that says made in China. And of course,
yes.
We did that experiment as well at work. And you wouldn't believe almost every single medical piece of equipment, from syringes to sponges to bandages, scissors, medication, everything says made in China. So, I mean, what do you say to that when people say, well, we have to do something about China? They're taking away our jobs and this and that and the trade and all that. What would you say to them when we are the ones who are consuming their goods, especially in Walmart?
Yes, I mean, I'm sort of split with that, you know. I don't agree with everything that Trump does, but, you know, I think one thing that I do agree, when he tries to keep jobs insourced into the United States, that may be a good direction to go into instead of outsourcing everything to keep jobs in the United States. That's one thing that China has done, and that's why we pull a lot of resources from them, is they try to keep, you know, a lot of jobs within their country. So I am still a little split on that and learning about that, but that is one thing that they try to do, is keep jobs within, you know, their borders.
Yeah, at some point we have to put our citizens first here in the United States too, and say jobs with benefits and dignity does matter.
Exactly.
Well, Ellen is going to take it away. Well, no, Ellen can, because she's holding up the computer. So here, Mr. Keenan Carver, we have 30 seconds left. Thank you so much for calling in from China.
I'd love to have you on again.
Would you like to say anything to your family in Palm Bay here? Because we really appreciate what you're doing there, and for being an ambassador of some sorts of the United States and doing good work there in China.
Sure. I just want to say, keep my mother safe. You know, that's a message to the United States, to Florida. You know, I looked over and seen that Florida had 60,000 cases within the last 7 days. And that scares me for my own family, my aunts and uncles. So I just implore everyone in the state of Florida to stay safe, wear your mask, and just
Stay safe. Well, thank you, friend. And well, I'll catch up with you on Facebook. So we're going to go right back to, we'll take a quick break. Ellen, thank you so much. Thank you, Keenan. And we'll be right back on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We had a fantastic discussion with a young man from China, Keenan Carver. That was a fantastic interview, Sita. How did you meet him again?
Florida Today.
You're just amazing.
I met him on the Florida Today. He had
anybody
an
wants
interview.
Networking instructions or how to do it, meet Sita
Begee. I'm telling you, I have like 15 people per week that wants to call in or come on the show.
It's just amazing.
And we're doing we've
so I just want to remind everybody that we actually that interview we Zoomed live, so I'll put that up on our Facebook so that you'll have that. You can also find all of our past episodes and all of our editions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on our website on SitaMediaInc.com and also on our Facebook page, Sita Media Inc. Facebook.
Right. And our second segment, we're going to have Vicky still with us, but we also have Mr. Alton Edmund is here.
Yes.
And I love him. I always remember when he wore a tie and how I made friends with him. So I was going to read
a tie.
I like his Black Lives Matter tie.
That's right.
So I'm going to let him tell our listening audience a little bit about himself. And this segment, Ellen, is this entire show today. Our good friend Jessica Travis Law Firm is sponsoring it. So Alton and Vicky are here as activists, and what does activists do after they discover that they have to be doing something for a community? Mm-hmm. So Alton, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So Alton Edmund, born and raised in Clewiston, Florida. I went to the University of Florida, where I graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in Criminology. And then I went to law school, where I studied law intensely for 3 years before taking the bar exam and becoming a licensed attorney. And during law school, I worked for the state attorney's office. I've clerked for judges before going to the public defender's office in Orange County and then going to the public defender's office in Brevard County so that I can be closer to the people in Brevard County that had become like family to me. And so, fast forward to 2017, you know, I was excused from a job over my activism, silent and peaceful activism, mind you. And so that's when I started my own law firm. I started my own business in 2017 and have been going strong since. And since I started my business in 2017, I've had more availability and more freedom to be more active in my community when it comes to initiatives related to kids. I have spoken at just about every middle school and high school in Brevard County. I've given motivational speeches and taught young boys how to tie ties in those schools with several organizations. I've joined boards for several organizations, one including Emma Jewell Charter Academy. Vicki Mitchell would know a little bit of something about Emma Jewell. Love EJCA. And I've really done what I can to be a very active participant here in Brevard. I'm a graduate of Leadership Brevard 2019, best class ever. and I'm very active in my city, the city of Cocoa City Government. I'm the chair of the Cocoa Police Department Citizen Review Advisory Committee, Citizen Advisory Committee. And so we also review different police complaints of Cocoa PD officers, and we make recommendations to the chief of police on things that can be done better. And I'm proud and thankful to be the chair of that board, and be able to just stand up for the people that don't have a voice, and be an advocate for those that don't have the ability, knowledge, education, power, or money to advocate on their own behalf.
Right. So you do the right thing even when nobody's looking.
I try to. I certainly do try.
You come across like that. Well, you know, people sometimes ask, why do we become activists, right?
Yes,
but
ma'am.
I mean, there's a whole lot of reasons. And I know, Vicky, you and I have talked about this a lot. Ellen, you and I have talked about this. Why does someone become an activist? Because we see something that we feel is not right.
That's right.
Because we see something that in our heart, as human beings, we know we can make a difference if we get involved.
Yes.
And being an activist, I think it used to be that people just sat down and say, let somebody else do it.
Mm.
Right.
But we've gotten to a point in our lives where there is nobody else. We are the they and the we and the him and the her.
Absolutely.
And so we have to jump in. Like right now we're looking at what's going on with our schools.
Right.
And a teacher's going to be able to teach. Our children going to be able to wash hands socially distance, and parents going to be able to have a job or go part-time or lose it, whatever. So we are going to become activists for that as
yes.
well.
Absolutely.
But Alton decided to become an activist not only for the community, but you saw that running for office, you could make a difference. And
absolutely.
After the march, after the successful march, you decided that you were going to take this one step further. I mean, we had over 4,000 people on June 6th right here.
Yes, ma'am.
And you had a leadership role in that. But after that, you said, you know what? I'm going to run for office.
Yes, ma'am.
So tell us, I mean, you're a busy man. You have your thriving law practice. You're involved in so many things in the community. And now you decided to run for office.
Yes, ma'am.
So tell us how that came about.
So I decided to run for office for a variety of reasons. It was really a culmination of different factors that intertwined at what seemed like a perfect time. I've been serving Brevard since 2013. There are people here that I've cared about that I've been connected to here in Brevard. And I was actually commuting back and forth in 2013 as a law school student, ministering as a choir director at a church. And I was commuting back and forth from Orlando while in school full time twice a week. And what I had an opportunity to witness in that time since I've been connected to Brevard County is just some of the things that the current sheriff is into, you know, some of the different things that he seems to get joy and pleasure from, like a wheel of fugitive, putting people's faces on a wheel and spinning.
Is that something that all the sheriffs do all around the country?
No,
certainly not.
Like.
Certainly not. There are some that have actually mimicked after him. But very few, if any, that I know of that do things like that, showing up to people's houses and making videos outside of people's houses and saying that, you know, there's a drug dealer that lives in there, but there's also women and children that live inside of that house. And his words are an indictment on everyone in that home. And so just seeing those different things happen, seeing how he parades around the chain gangs, seeing how he operates the animal shelters with the focus on no-kill policy that is actually far more sinister than that when you look a little bit deeper into it. When you consider the lack of transparency in the budget and the fact that taxpayers don't have an idea or an iota of what he's doing with the $136.11 million budget that he's in control of, while simultaneously seeking to seize control of emergency management, which is another $11+ million, seems to be troublesome. We have someone grabbing continuously for power while already showing a lack of accountability and transparency over the power he already has. A culmination of those things that I watched with the way that he operated his office.
It made you jump right,
right
in.
Combined also with the fact that there was no one running against him, combined with the fact that we're living in a time where for God's sake, we need some reform. And if any time was the time, now is the time.
For reform.
For reform, for accountability, and for change in the way that police leadership is run.
Right.
Because when we talk about the culture of policing, when we talk about the different things that are going on around the culture, around the country, those things that create culture and bad and poisonous and corrupt culture in our societies start at the top with corrupt officers, corrupt sheriffs, corrupt chiefs that run their departments in such a way that human life is devalued outside of the blue. And I just want to make sure that all human life is valued by law enforcement and within law enforcement as well.
Yeah, well, you know what? When you and Vicky helped plan the march here in Cocoa on June 6th, you were also involved in working with law enforcement on logistics and stuff. How did that go with working with what we have currently in our community?
That was actually a great experience. Vicky was amazing, you know, because I mean, basically, my job was to handle logistics and to put people in places and to make sure that the people were taken care of during the march. But without Vicky, you know, my head might have exploded because she fielded all of those. She was the point of contact.
Well, she's a mom, you know.
Right.
Mom, we can wear 100
right.
hats.
She was That's the point right. of contact, and she fielded all of those calls that had nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
And so I can only imagine how her phone blew up during the time. She managed the Facebook page. She did advertising, marketing. I mean, and she also put this different speakers on the program. So without her, it would have been very difficult for me. And so I'm thankful for my role. But, you know, with law enforcement, we met with law enforcement throughout the entire week that we were planning the event. And so we met with Coco PD. Chief Cantaloupe called my cell phone several times and we spoke on the phone. We also met with Rockledge PD, and I was in very good contact with Lieutenant Chris Crawford, who was the contact for Rockledge PD. And so we were in contact throughout the entire week, and it would not have been such a success without the ability to work successfully and seamlessly with both Coco PD and Rockledge PD to ensure that we would have a successful and safe event for everyone there.
Well, you know, when you talk, what I'm hearing, and I think Ellen could jump in here too, I'm hearing that you're saying there's two things that's very, very important in our community, and it's trust and respect. And you were able to sit down with the police department right here next door. You know, Chief Cantaloupe is right next door. And have that in our community because they respected what you and Vicky were doing.
Absolutely.
And so many other people, all the volunteers. But as time goes by, we're all watching what happened with George Floyd. As an activist and as an attorney, what can you do to ensure that a police officer here in Brevard County, Florida, or Orlando, or anywhere in the United States, or in the world for that matter, would never put his knee on someone's neck and cut off their supply of oxygen to a point where they say, I can't breathe? As an activist, what can you do to ensure that?
Well, as an activist and as an attorney, it is my job to push for legislation and push for policies within our local policing agencies that forbid such activity. One thing that I think is incredibly important is removing that vascular neck restraint from the playbook. And we've had an opportunity to speak, Victoria and I, with many of the police chief heads of local organizations here in Brevard County. And pretty much all of them said that is not something that they would allow and something that is in their playbook that officers could use. However, one said that's still a tool on his tool belt. Can you guess that one? Yes, the current sheriff believes that vascular neck restraint is a tool that they should continue to be able to use in their tool belt when they have, you know, guns, pepper spray, mace, tasers. You know, there are a lot of different tools that officers could use
to take somebody down.
Right, to take someone down and to bring them into control that are not deadly.
Right, and here's the thing. People use the word defund in the wrong way,
yeah.
Right? I mean, we are such a society. We are so reactive, not proactive. And you could jump in here, Vicky.
Okay.
we spend so much money after the fact. We mm-hmm. spend money in the prisons to make sure that there's clean linen, there's food, there's medication, there's a bed, there's staffing, because somebody has a contract and they're going to make money off that right. system.
It's all about money.
Right? Mm-hmm. So why not spend that money ahead of time? If you say you care about human life,
right.
you should care about human life from the womb to the tomb. It shouldn't stop when the kid is born and they need an affordable house and a wage and a mommy and daddy with health insurance right. and mommy and daddy who can pay rent and car payment and all that. So what would you say to someone, Vic, when people say, well, defunding the police department is the word is wrong, but yeah, they're taking the money to put it where?
Right. They're just reallocating the sources. I was actually invited to, it was a protest a couple weeks ago. And it was in regards to defunding the police department. And I was like, listen, I'm not getting on board on that one because I don't agree with defunding the police, but it's all about the wording. I understand the narrative and initiative that they're talking about, but there needs to be a better word in place besides defunding.
Yeah, say allocate.
Allocate, reallocate funding, police department funding.
Accountability,
but I think if you're going to reallocate those dollars to after-school programs or...
Mental health.
Or,
you know what I say? Give it to the parents.
Or invest in more PAL programs. Coco has a Coco PAL, and I think Titusville has one. I'm not sure about the south end of the county, but if you're going to reinvest those dollars, invest them into the children. So maybe... you have local children that may want to grow up and be like a police officer, you know, and then they can serve in their communities as well. So
Community policing. That's something that I think we ought to look in. So Elton, so after the march, the 4,000 plus march on June 6th, you decided that you would run for sheriff on your Democrat.
Do you mind if I jump in right quick
on
the topic of defunding police? Mm-hmm. That is a really interesting one. And I must comment on this one because this one in particular is one that a few local Republican politicians have been telling people that I support. And I've never said that I support defunding police. And here's the reason why, because it's important that we define that before I cast my support upon it. And so when people generally think about defunding the police, they think that you're just taking away money from law enforcement agencies, that you're taking money out of that you're taking food out of the mouths of those officers and their children. And so when you frame it that way, obviously that's an issue.
Yeah.
But when I talk about my platform, one of the things that I talk about is reallocating some of those BCSO funds to creating a special unit to respond to people with PTSD and mental health issues. And so to have a unit to respond to situations like the one with Greg Edwards to make sure that he doesn't end up dead, mm-hmm. I think it's worth a reallocation of funds.
Yeah, exactly.
To reallocate funds so that we can properly fund our animal service and animal control shelters is very important, because basically the way that it's done now is so that Ivy can make it seem as if they're a no-kill facility. They're basically giving animals away to whoever, people without background checks, homeless people that they can guarantee or have no sort of security would actually take care of the animals. And you're seeing healthy animals being released into the wild that are domesticated animals. And those animals are getting sick and dying as a result. And so when we talk about defunding the police, it's important to me that I clarify that a general defunding of the police is not something that I ever support.
I don't think any sane human being wants
to defund
the police.
That would be foolish.
But the commercials that are on right now,
right.
You see the commercials and they say, hello, 911. You'll have to wait 5 days before you get response.
Right.
That's not the intention of it. That's another example of people blowing things out of proportion.
Exactly.
Those, what did you call them, the people that were instigators that were showing up? And it's those type of people, because that's not that. One of those campaigns is not even supported by anybody.
But here's the thing. You have people running for office mm-hmm. who do say the right things to their base.
Right.
Because they want those votes. And they will use the word defund against other people.
Right.
But the truth is, how about if we look at what causes stress in a family?
Mm-hmm.
Number one, wages.
Wages, money.
Number two, people don't have health insurance. Yeah. Number three, they can't afford medication. Number four, they can't afford food. Number five, they can't pay car insurance. Number six, maybe they don't have access to birth control. There's a lot of reasons why people are stressed out in America, and it starts with all of us understanding. Go talk to the people before you start running your mouth about who wants to defund what.
Well, that would what require emotional intelligence. What they're saying
is, take some of the funds. Just like a police officer has a job and he gets wages and he gets a car and he has benefits and he has health insurance, every parent in America wants the same thing. Right. So how about empowering the parents so they don't have to be so stressed out, so they won't beat their wives or kids or each other? It's about the foundation of the family. And if we fix the family, we can fix America. Right. So, Alton, you're running for sheriff. What would you do differently if when elected to the sheriff's office?
Well, there are three simple things that I would do much differently. And this is what my platform hinges upon. The way that accountability is handled at the Brevard County Sheriff's Office would immediately change. And so when it comes to internal accountability, it's important for me to make sure that my deputies are very well taken care of. I want to make sure that there are programs in place to make sure that they have well-rounded and different outlets for the stress and the different things that they deal with. Because, you know, sometimes you have officers put in situations, stressful situations, where they have a split second to think, and because they don't have the proper services, because they don't have the proper resources, sometimes they make the wrong decisions. One, I want to make sure as sheriff that I'm putting my deputies in a position to be successful. But accountability, of course, cuts both ways. Accountability is also important when it comes to different officers that put the community in danger. And so if we have an officer or officers that put the community that they are serving or supposed to be serving in danger, then we need to make sure that we're taking the proper protocol, making the proper steps to discipline them and graduate those sanctions until they are eventually removed if they don't change their behavior. And so too often we see within agencies, the bad apples, those officers that shouldn't be in agencies, stick around for 20, 30 years until they do something like Chauvin did.
He was disciplined 18 times,
right,
they said.
Right, he was disciplined 18 times, and he had a long history of mishandling certain situations. But he was still 18 years, however many years later, he was a supervising officer and still working within that department. I want to make sure that we take action early to begin reforming and changing the attitudes of some of these officers.
I always like that word, reform.
Reform. I like it.
Like, I like reforming everything, including myself.
Me too.
So what is your website? Because you're going to need money, you're going to need volunteers, and you need people. Of course, we can't knock on doors right now unless you want to wear a mask and do it. But give us the website so people could go on and check out your platform and Alton Edwin for sheriff.
www.altonforsheriff.com is the best place to go for information. If you want to donate, if you want to volunteer, that's the best, really good place to go. You can also find our Facebook page at Alton Edwin for Sheriff on Facebook, and we post updates throughout the week to make sure that people know exactly what's going on as it relates to the campaign. So those are places where you can go.
So somebody just sent me a question. What happens to a police officer when he takes off his uniform and he becomes part of the community again? I mean, why is it different when you put the uniform on? Is it power? What is it that makes people change to a point where they would put a knee on somebody's neck when to put the uniform on?
Well, truth be told, power has a way of bringing out more of what is already in people. And so sometimes you really just have people that should not be in law enforcement or any sort of field where they're serving and supposed to be helping other people. Sometimes you just have the wrong person in a position of power that is going to abuse that power simply because of who they are. Right.
And so how do we have a balance?
I think it's good to increase the amount of bias training and the amount of intake process that we undergo so that we can have more checks and balances to kind of keep out people that have biases and that would allow their biases to interfere with their ability to adequately and fairly enforce the law.
So do you then believe, Vicky, do you believe we do have bias and unbiased racism?
Yeah, I do. I think everybody has some sort of racism in them, even if they don't want to admit it. I mean, sometimes I can see a person that may be of the same, of my color. They may be black, and then they may have something on, and I'm already prejudging them and all this other good stuff. So I think even if we don't want to admit to it, it is in us. I think it's the way that you express it. You know, just because I'm judging or whatever the case is, doesn't mean that I'm going to say, well, all these people are this way. But I mean,
so how do we fix it, right? So I've always said, in order to change racism and hatred in our world, you have to change your own behavior.
But you have to seek understanding as well, because right. I think with the George Floyd situation, there have been a lot of discussions and talks. I know I've been to a couple along with Attorney Edmonds, and it actually opened up my eyes. We did something recently with and I was over at United Way, and it was, the room was half and half. You had half African-American people and half Caucasian and a few other Hispanics mixed in there, and everyone had an opportunity to talk about racism and how they see it and if they experienced it in their own family. And there were a few people that, you know, mentioned that, you know, they were taught some sort of racism in their culture, and it was sad, but I mean, at least it was a start to have that conversation.
But education is such a beautiful thing, yeah. Because when you educate people about cultures and the right. way people think, you could see it differently.
Yeah.
We only have a minute left, and I'm going to let Elton. How would you change the bias or unbiased racism that we see?
Well, within Brevard County Sheriff's Office, one of the ways that you change the bias that we see within the department is really through the intake process and how we hire people, and through the training process and how we train people. I think it's important. There are different counseling methods and different psychiatric methods by which you can determine and find what bias people have. And those are methods that oftentimes are not used within hiring agencies because, I mean, that's not a priority to some people. But I think we live in a time where that is becoming more and more of a priority to understand and to identify the bias within people that would interfere with their ability to keep their community safe.
Or the ability to do their job.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Most important, if you're a nurse, it doesn't matter what you do for a living, do it right and do it from your heart and
Absolutely.
Do it because you are serving people.
Right.
Leadership is about serving people. It's about having people around you that empower you, and you empower them to do what's right.
Right.
Right? Good leadership.
What a fantastic show today. We had such a robust conversation about what's going on in their community. Thank you, Vicky Michener and Elton Edmonds, and also Keenan, and our good friend over there who's sitting in the sitting behind.
He took a good rest.
Yeah, he did have a good rest. Thank you all so much for being here with us, and thank you for tuning in each and every week here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here on F1510 WWBC.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
And you're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, Merritt Island, FM 94.7.